In this episode of Fictional Hangover, we talk about podcasts, investigations, and, for some reason, vampire hunters in our discussion of Sadie by Courtney Summers. Yes! Everybody, welcome to Fictional Hangover, a podcast about young adult and new adult books, series, authors, and voice actors that is full of spoilers. I'm Amanda.
And I'm Claire, and today we're going to discuss Sadie by Courtney Summers.
Standard disclaimer, if you haven't read this book, please remember that Fictional Hangover is all about spoilers. If you haven't read or listened and don't want to be spoiled, stop listening to us and go read or listen to the book. Then come back. If you haven't done this but want to pretend that you have, or if you don't care about spoilers, or if you just like the show so much that you don't care about any of that, then listen up. But really, do you want to listen to this one? Trigger warning
everywhere. Awooga, awooga, trigger warning.
It's
a difficult book, so we're going to give a trigger warning.
Yeah.
There are references to pedophilia.
But no.
The references to paedophilia, drug and alcohol abuse. There's also references to potential rape and scenes of assault. We will not in any way, shape or form go into any detail. Because frankly, we don't want to.
Mm-mm.
However, if it's something that you may not be comfortable with, we totally get that.
You could listen to our summary and discussion because we leave more stuff out than what is in the book, so maybe this is a safer way to consume it than the actual book, question mark? I don't know.
Yeah. I think that's probably fair, actually, because, you know, even in the book there's nothing overt, there's nothing, you do not see these scenes, but they're more implied and more directly this is going to happen. It's not a comfortable book at all.
No. So, why did we pick this one, Claire? Would you like to talk about that?
Because it fits in with our book theme, our book challenge theme this month, which is award winners. And this has won several awards. So, it won the 2019 Odyssey Award, 2019 Audi Award for Young Adult Fiction, and 2019 YALSA Top 10 Amazing Audiobooks, and the Audiophile Earphones Award.
That's a lot of awards.
Which is impressive.
It's a lot.
It is. It is. Let's dive in. What background information have you got for me?
This is an actual podcast. The Girls is an actual podcast based on the book. That's what I learned today. Cybils.com. CYBILS.com. The Girls is an actual podcast. Did you expect that to become a real thing? Were you involved in any way? This is, of course, asked to Courtney Summers. I was hoping Wednesday Books would take advantage of Sadie's unique format, so when I found out that they were going to produce a podcast for it, I was thrilled. It was pretty much a dream come true. I agree. The podcast was pulled directly from the audiobook production, and the extent of her involvement with that was approving the cast.
Yeah, I like that. I was reading today about how influential podcasts are to the book industry. And it's really surprising, like, so to hear that is, it's kind of like, wow, okay, I like that.
Yeah,
I really... So now I'm thinking we, as a podcast, need to be more influential to the publishing industry. Yeah. When's our book coming out?
I don't know. I was going to say, I really like the idea of podcasts about books.
I wonder why. Do you think our book's going to be the Fictional Hangover fanfic edition? And it's just going to be, we're finally going to write down all of our fanfic.
Yes, and it's just a collection of short stories.
Yeah, that would be quite cool, actually. It would be very well written, unlike other fanfiction books that are published.
Correct.
Sideways look.
Yes, because I am a fan of complete sentences.
I like chronological order.
That's a good one.
Character development.
Nah, I don't need that.
Well, by character development, I just mean they need to be a decent character that's well-rounded and not just a 2D no, stick
you're
insect.
You're asking for too much.
I'm asking
Claire.
Too much.
Too much.
I've set a high bar, high standard for my fanfic.
You really have. You really, really have.
Only published fanfic. If you want to go on one of those sites, go for it. I'm all for that.
But if you, by some sort of happenstance, get published into a real book, please, for the love of fuck, edit your work. Did I say that? Did I say that out loud? I'm sorry. I'm sorry!
Several times!
I'm sorry.
I love the fact that we're both coming off, like, the same thing as well. Okay, let's move on.
Yeah, let's move on. Initial thoughts!
Okay. Going in, knew nothing. Absolutely nothing. Apart from the book blurb. And I thought it sounded interesting. I didn't exactly know what it was about because the book blurb turns out to be not really very specific. And honestly, I try not to dig too far into books. I like especially murder mysteries or just mysteries in general because I like to go in and form my own opinion.
And solve the mystery yourself?
Solve the mystery. Get my Miss Marple gear on or whatever. And solve the mystery myself. This one was fairly easy solvable within the first chapter.
Yeah.
Wasn't too much of a mystery.
Not very mysterious, this mystery.
No, it wasn't. It's probably, after reading it, one of the most difficult books I've read for the podcast. And I'm going to say I did not enjoy it. It was an experience, and I'm putting it in the same category. Sorry, I'm putting it in the same category as I do with Rory Powers' Wilder Girls, where it was. I'm glad I read it. It was certainly an experience to read, but it wasn't all happy smiles and enjoyment. It was the subject matter is very heavy, and it's not my usual cup of tea.
Yeah.
What about you?
So, like you. If we haven't read the book before, I try not to learn anything about it beforehand.
I don't read reviews. I try never to read reviews as well.
Yeah.
Which is odd, considering we're basically a review podcast as well as a discussion.
Well, clearly only our reviews count.
Of course.
And we make them up as we go along.
Of course.
The only thing that I did know about this one is that it was narrated by Rebecca Solaire with Dan Bittner.
Yes.
And, you know, some other people. And we liked Rebecca Solaire and Dan Bittner in Renegades by Marissa Meyer. When we talked about
that one a while ago.
So I knew whether or not I enjoyed the book or liked it or whatever, I knew it would be a good listen.
Yes. But that's the thing as well, because we love audiobooks so much. The book itself or the author may not sell the book to us, but the audiobook narrator may. So, you know, we may listen to a book because of who's reading it, not because of who's wrote it.
Yes. And now, after our discussion last week, we'll probably start reading books based on who produced or directed the audiobook. Not even based on the narrators, because that's how weird we are.
Next will be the sound mixer.
We
will be the people who end up producing that library of audiobook producers that we need. We need one of those.
Yeah.
Publishers, get on that.
Yeah, really. Yeah. What? Sheesh. Danny Gilchrist, host of Always Out There, would like to tell you about a new serialized podcast. The Girls is an 8-episode series available on the Macmillan website to download now. It's created and hosted by West McCrae, one of the producers on Always Out There. The Girls will explore what happens when a devastating crime reveals a deeply unsettling mystery.
The Girls, Episode 1. West McCrae introduces the listeners to Cold Creek, Colorado, and interviews local residents Mia Beth Foster, a grandmotherly figure who is the manager of Sparkling River Estates Trailer Park, and resident Carl Earl, who contacted 911 on October 3rd after seeing smoke in the sky over the abandoned schoolhouse. The body of Matty Southern was found by the fire crew between the burning schoolhouse and the apple orchard. Matty was 13 years old and had been reported missing 3 days earlier. Matty has a 19-year-old sister, Sadie Hunter, a surrogate grandmother in Mayor Beth Foster, and her mother, Claire Southern, who has not been in the picture for a while. West explains in a voiceover that he heard about the story of Matty when working in the area, but wasn't until a year after the fire, sitting in his New York office, that West considered investigating after receiving a phone call from Mayor Beth. In June, Matty's sister Sadie disappeared. In July, a car with Sadie's belongings was found abandoned in Fairfield, Colorado. Mayor Beth reached out to West in hopes of finding Sadie alive.
Sadie. Sadie buys a Chevy from Craigslist. She went to meet the seller on the side of the road, her backpack on and a switchblade in her back pocket. The seller, Becky with an I, which is her full legal name. The seller, Becky with an I, takes the wad of cash, but still asks Lara, Sadie's middle name, some questions. When they stray from yes and no answers, Sadie is forced to reveal her stutter, a telling feature when she's trying to conduct a low-key deal. When the papers are signed, Sadie takes out a couple of expired license plates from Maybeth's collection and attaches them to her new car. Sadie doesn't think Maybeth will be too surprised when she knocks on her door and finds her missing. Maybeth knew Sadie had something in her head and her heart.
The Girls, Episode 1. West mentions that girls go missing all the time, and it was the urging of his boss, Danny Gilchrist, to dig deeper into Matty and Sadie's story. West plays an interview with Mayor Beth. In it, she talks about Matty's death breaking Sadie. The episode cuts to Detective George Alfonso, who helped investigate Matty's disappearance. An Amber Alert was issued and persons of interest talked to, but nothing. Forensics after the fire were poor, as it wasn't established until afterward that there was a murder. The only clue is a witness, Nora Stackett, proprietor of Stackett Groceries, who says she saw Matty getting into a pickup truck the night she disappeared. Interviewing Mia Beth, she describes finding all of Sadie's belongings in the dumpster. She knew she wouldn't be coming back. West describes the trailer the two girls shared. Matty's room is messy and looks lived in. Sadie's was sparse. Mia Beth admits that for weeks before Sadie disappeared, she knew something was up. She was planning something. They then talk about Claire, the girl's mother. Claire was born for trouble. She was a drug addict and had arrests for misdemeanours. Shortly after Claire fell pregnant, she lost her own mother. Mia Beth tried to step in to fill the breach. She'd made a promise to Claire's mom.
Sadie. Sadie dyes her hair a muddy blonde in a public bathroom. She's thinking about Maddie's laugh and how much she looks like their mother. They do not share a father. They do not look like sisters. A short while later, Sadie pulls up to Whittler's truck stop and heads into Ray's Diner, which sells the best apple pie in Garnet County. After ordering a coffee, Sadie asks the waitress if Ray is around. He died a few years ago. Shit. Taking out an 8-year-old picture of Sadie, Maddie, their mom, and her then-boyfriend Keith outside a trailer, Sadie shows it to the waitress. She's trying to find Keith. When asked who wants to know, Sadie tells the waitress she's his daughter, but the waitress denies knowing him. She's lying, and Sadie calls her out. One of the other customers points Sadie toward a shady character, Caddy Sinclair, a dealer who hangs out by the dumpsters. Sadie is unsurprisingly in a bad mood when she approaches Caddy. He starts to mock her stutter, so she sticks the photo in his face and demands information. What does she want to know about Darren Marshall? He'll give her more information, but it'll cost her, and he isn't talking money. Grabbing Sadie, he hauls her into the shadows, unbuckling his belt.
The Girls, Episode 1. West and Mia Beth are looking through a photo album. In the recording, Mia Beth says how much Claire hated being a mother, that Sadie looked like her own mother, and she hated it. Sadie's father is unknown. No one is even sure if Hunter is the correct surname. Sadie's childhood was lonely. At this point, they play a cassette recording of 2-year-old Sadie. School was hell for Sadie. Both the children and the teachers were harsh. When Matty came, she became Sadie's whole world. Sadie took care of Matty, made Matty believe their mother was sick, not neglectful. Claire loved Mattie too. She was blonde like her, and she treated Mattie like a doll. Mattie adored her big sister right back. As they reach the end of the album, Beth notices a photograph is missing.
Sadie. Sitting in her car, turning a switchblade over and over in her hand, Sadie is thinking violent and murderous thoughts. She's going to kill him. She remembers when Mattie was 5 and she was 11, and she would try to protect Mattie and let her sleep in her bed with her. Keith would tell Sadie, "Nobody talks like that who's got a choice," after he smacked her. When Keith was around, he would pretend to be their dad and make a big production of it in front of people, but he didn't stay. When Sadie was 19 and Mattie was 13, Keith came back. The switchblade was his. It's Sadie's now.
The Girls, Episode 2. West continues to give the listeners an idea of Mattie and Sadie's home life with their mother, or rather, without. Claire left the Girls when Mattie was 10 and Sadie was 16, by the time Claire was completely lost to her addiction. Maybeth tried to tell Claire to get her shit together, but she left the Girls the day after Maybeth left for a vacation. Sadie worked at McKinnon Gas Station, and now Marty McKinnon is interviewed by West. When Sadie first started working for him, she was a scared, desperate girl. Marty was the one Mattie called when Sadie fell ill and needed to go to the hospital while Maybeth was away. Maybeth flew back and described Mattie getting depressed at the thought of losing Sadie too. When she told Sadie she dropped out of high school to take care of Mattie, they got a postcard from Claire not long after. "Greetings from sunny LA." Maybeth describes how that postcard caused a rift between the girls. It revitalised Mattie and made her want to look for their mother. Sadie did not. Mattie became aggressive with Sadie, and Sadie bore it and forgave her. West comments that everyone seems to agree that the drift was the catalyst for Mattie's disappearance. She went to find her mother and got into a killer's truck.
Sadie. Sadie has spent the night sleeping in her car. She's in a small town called Wagner and is waiting to visit Marley Singer. I feel like I need to cut in here because Marley Singer just only makes me think of The Selection.
Same. Yeah. That's who answered the door in my head. She got kicked out and went down the tracks. It's bad, bad times. That's fanfic for you. It's not pleasant.
Mm-mm.
We'll not put that one in the book, shall we?
That one will just be like a paragraph long.
Yeah.
Just a short and sweet one.
It'll end with a, "I'm so poor. My heart is broken." Dang. Serious bits.
Sadie spent the night sleeping in her car. She's in a small town called Wagner and is waiting to visit Marley Singer. That's the name Caddy gave her when his trousers dangled around his knees and her switchblade was pressed to his throat. When Sadie goes to her house, Marley doesn't want to talk. For hours, Sadie sits on her stoop until Marley finally invites her in. She's obviously suspicious. Sadie gives her the story that her name is Lyra and that she is looking for Keith/Darren, who is her father. Marley knew Keith/Darren, but neither are his real name. She knows this because her brother went to school with him. Years later, he came back to Wagner, came for dinner, and didn't leave for a while. When she found a Polaroid picture in his jeans while doing laundry, she had to turn him out. It was a very bad picture. Finally, Marley relents and tells Sadie his real name is Jack Hirsch.
The Girls, Episode 2. West tells the listeners that Maybeth collected Sadie's backpack from Fairfield Police Department in July. West interviews Detective Sheila Gutierrez, who argues that they did all they could to find Sadie. West sees a sale note he's found in Sadie's Chevy and interviews Becky with an eye. She describes Sadie as awfully twitchy, who got bitchy with her when she questioned her over her stutter. I mean, come on, love. You were really quite rude.
Oh my god. Stupid Becky with an eye.
And she writes it in the emails, Becky with an eye. You've written the eye.
Yeah, you don't need to spell it out.
No. So, there's a recording played of a phone call with Danny Gilchrist, where West says he doesn't think there's much of a story here, and that Sadie's just a runaway. Danny insists there is a real human element, and West needs to chase down the leads.
Sadie. Kendall Baker is Sadie's way to Silas Baker, Marley's brother. Sadie finds Kendall Baker on the internet through her social media and learns that she frequents Cooper's Bar in Montgomery with her brother, so she goes to see her. Silas seems to have it all. College education, good investments, decent looks, a loving wife and children. Sadie manages to assimilate herself with Kendall, her brother Noah, and friends Carrie and Javi. They assume she has moved into the Cornell's place and is one of the Holdens, and she just goes along with that story. When Sadie asks if they know Jack, Keith, or Darren Marshall, she's met with blank looks and what the fucks. Javi is really nice to Sadie, and they hit it off. He gives Sadie the in she needs when he invites her to Kendall's house the next day. If she can get into the house, she's one step closer to Silas.
The Girls, Episode 2. In a voiceover, West describes the contents of Sadie's backpack. One item sticks out, a menu for Rhea's Diner. Detective Gutierrez confirms on a recorded call that it was looked into, but yielded nothing. West needs to dig himself. He meets Ruby Lockwood, a longtime waitress at Rhea's and Rhea's wife before he died. It wasn't Ruby who talked to the Fairfield PD, but Saul, Ruby's brother-in-law. In an interview, Saul confirms a girl came round with a photograph that she was trying to find someone on it. The police left a picture of the girl, which Ruby hadn't seen. West shows Ruby a picture of Sadie, and she recognises her instantly.
Sadie. Silas Baker lives in a house on a hill in a picturesque town. Sadie hates it. Waiting outside the Baker's house in her car, Sadie remembers Maddie's birth. She was the first to hold Maddie, and she didn't want to ever let go. Silas, unlocking his car door, wakes her from her reverie, and when he pulls away, Sadie follows him. Silas parks near what looks like an abandoned house. Does he know she's following him? She parks a little way away, and on foot, heads for the house. He's inside and can hear her. He calls out, "Who's there?" Silas leaves, so Sadie investigates the house. It's trashed and full of garbage, musty and decayed. Upstairs, Sadie finds a hole in the wall behind a painting. Inside is a small metal box with a padlock. She takes the box outside and beats it with a rock until it finally opens.
The Girls, Episode 3. The interview with Ruby Lockwood continues. She recalls seeing Sadie, but she was blonde. Real thin, a wisp of a thing. Ruby also recalls her stutter, which jogs Saul's memory. Ruby tells West Sadie was looking for her father and showed her a picture of him. Ruby knew him as a regular a few years ago. Ruby admits to telling Sadie she did not know the person in the picture, but she did. So she was rightfully called a liar, just so. Darren was a real good guy who kept himself and never caused trouble. He was living with a woman called Marley Singer at the time. She hasn't seen him in a few years, but he sent a beautiful bouquet of flowers to Ray's funeral. Ruby tells West that Sadie was a rude girl who called her a liar, and she is sure she is running a con. Excuse me, you were lying. You admit you were lying. You're a liar.
Yeah.
Justified.
Yeah.
West leaves a photo of Sadie at the diner, and a day later, he gets a phone call from Caddy Sinclair.
Sadie. Sadie is in Lily's cafe. She is dirty and hungry and feels sick. Fuck Marley and her brother. Silas took Darren under his wing, probably because like attracts like. Silas just hit it better. Fuck Marley. She must have known. Now, Sadie starts wondering if she needs to kill Silas Baker, too. Borrowing a cell phone from a nice lady, Sadie calls Javi and asks him to meet her at the cafe. He gets there quickly and buys her breakfast. Sadie struggles to eat. It's agony. But she needs the food and has to force her body to comply. Javi is concerned for her.
The Girls, Episode 3. Listeners hear Caddy Sinclair's interview. West describes him as an interesting contradiction. He wants to be left alone, but a Google search shows a teenager with dreams of being the next Eminem. Mm-hmm. In Caddy's interview, he tells West he thinks the missing girl is dead. She was out of her mind and more than likely would get into trouble or mess with the wrong person. Caddy confirms the guy in Sadie's picture is Keith / Darren and says that Sadie threatened him with a knife, so he pointed her in the direction of Marley Singer. He's also going to get a charge with assault.
Really, guy? Really?
West confirms with me and Beth that Sadie isn't a violent person, and in a studio voiceover asks, why did she feel like she needed the switchblade?
Sadie. Breakfast is heavy in her stomach as Sadie pulls up to Silas Baker's house again. This time, she heads around back, following the sounds of Kendall and Noah. Javi isn't with her, but she tells the siblings he's meeting her there. Their parents aren't home at the moment. As Sadie walks into the house with Kendall to borrow something to wear for the pool, she realizes they don't know their father is a monster. Suddenly, Silas speaks from behind her. She escapes to the bathroom, out of his sight. Sadie remembers a girl of 11 in the bathtub, hiding her body from a man, calling for her mother's help. She won't get out until he leaves, but he won't leave. The man says, Sadie, we're a family now. Ever since Maddie died, ugly memories keep floating to the surface. Leaving the bathroom, Sadie quietly investigates, but finds nothing. Back in the kitchen, Silas is alone on his phone. He sets it down to get Sadie a drink, and she quickly touches a screen to keep it unlocked. He makes idle chit-chat, and when Kendall and Noah draw his attention away, Sadie takes the opportunity to pocket his phone and hurry out the front door. Fumbling to get in her car as she looks through the contacts for Keith, for Darren, she finds Jack H. and an address in Langford. From behind her, Silas demands his phone back.
The Girls, Episode 3. In a voiceover, West describes the town of Wagner and its similarities to Coal Creek, except it's less defeated. He's come to meet Marley Singer. She contacted him when he was set to go back to New York, and she wants to go on record that she knows nothing. West also tells the listeners that it's frustrating not being able to find a girl who made little effort to cover her tracks. West catches up with Mia Beth. She tells him about three men in Claire's life that stood out. Arthur, who was dead now, Paul, the last man she was with, and Keith, who was around when the girls were little. Mia Beth just can't wrap her head around Sadie looking for her father.
Sadie. Silas Baker is angry. Sadie can see it under the surface. He rips his phone from her grasp as she repeats Jack's address in her head. 451 Twining Street, 451 Twining Street, and demands to know who she is. He knows she isn't a Holden, like his children said, because he met the Holden's daughter. He also knows she was the one following him that morning. They grapple, and the switchblade comes out. Sadie's face is cracked against the steering wheel of the car by Silas, and blood pours from her nose. Silas demands to know what she wants, and what she knows. The fight draws Kendall and Noah, who try to call the police, but Silas stops them. He just wants Sadie, whoever she is, gone. Beaten up and bloody, Sadie leaves.
The Girls, Episode 4. West begins the episode assessing the three names Mia Beth gave him: Arthur, Keith, and Paul. West has been able to confirm that Arthur died of an overdose 2 years after leaving Claire. Keith has no record, but he has a team on it. In an interview, Mia Beth says how Keith stuck around the longest and that he was her favourite. He didn't start bad like most others. Yes, Claire picked him up in a bar, but he was sober, got her home, and introduced himself to Mia Beth. He treated her with respect, like she was the girl's real grandmother. He was also a God-fearing man, and he tried to teach the girls religion. Mia Beth recalls that he'd always wanted kids and that Matty and Sadie were the next best thing. Matty liked him, but Sadie never did. It ended between Claire and Keith after a year, in the middle of the night with her screaming at him. Claire got tired of her men quickly and would kick them out. He waved goodbye as he left, and that was the last Mia Beth saw of him. Back to the voiceover, West talks about Paul. He was with Claire during a difficult time in his life for about 8 months, but it's a time I doesn't want to revisit. In his phone interview, Paul talks about how he met Claire by nearly running her over. It wasn't until he moved in that he realised how bad Claire was, but he loved her and made himself sick for her. He stayed out of the girl's way. They didn't hate each other, just didn't need each other. He left when he found Claire with another guy. Once he left, he got clean. After speaking with Paul, West calls Mayor Beth and the recording is played on the episode. He tells Mayor Beth the investigation has come to a standstill and he needs to step back and wait for new developments. Mayor Beth sounds panicked. She doesn't want West to give up. She might have some information, but she doesn't want Sadie to get into trouble.
Sadie. Sitting in her car looking at the postcard from LA, Sadie remembers a rare moment of affection from her mother. Late one night, Sadie had fallen asleep in front of the TV. Claire came in, sat next to her, stroked her hair, and whispered, "I made you," both pretending Sadie was still asleep. Starting the car back up, Sadie heads to 451 Twining Street, Langford, but she'll need a library or something to find directions, and she needs to get gas. As she passes the outskirts of Montgomery, Sadie spots a lone female hitchhiker soaked through from the rain. Against her better judgment, she pulls over and gives her a ride. The girl, Kat, offers to pay for gas and has a phone for directions. Perfect. They talk on the drive. There are a lot of bad memories, sad stories, and half-truths until Sadie skids the car and is forced to take a break off the road.
The Girls, Episode 4. Mayor Beth tells West about the day Mattie disappeared. She has a rule. It's not decent to call on someone before 9 a.m. So at 9:01, Mattie would come pounding on Mayor Beth's door, and the day she disappeared was no different. Mattie didn't have any plans that day. Mayor Beth had encouraged her to reconcile with Sadie since they'd been fighting about Claire again. Mattie wanted to find Claire in LA. Sadie did not. After dinner that day, Mayor Beth talked to Sadie about it, and Sadie admitted, "I don't think I'll ever be enough for Mattie." West plays a recording of Marty McKinnon, who says Sadie worked a long shift and clocked out late that day. Going back to Mayor Beth, she confirms Sadie came back to her place and fell asleep on her couch. Mayor Beth texted Mattie to let her know where Sadie was. In a voiceover, West tells the listeners that Mattie never got that text, or any text Sadie sent her the following day. West describes the agony and turmoil in Mayor Beth's voice and in her demeanour, and that she is carrying a lot of guilt and responsibility. She gives West something found in Sadie's car. It's a credit card belonging to Kat Mieva. West is able to easily track her down.
Sadie. Waking up from a short sleep, Kat sitting next to her, Sadie heads back onto the road, but something is off with Kat. Pulling into a gas station, Kat shoves money into Sadie's hand and gets out to stretch her legs. Sadie pays for the gas, a bottle of water, and a jar of peanut butter inside the store, but when she returns to the car, Kat is nowhere to be seen, and all her stuff is gone. Going back into the store, she checks with the clerk, who saw Kat hitch a ride with some guy in a yellow truck.
The Girls, Episode 4. West, in a voiceover, describes Kat Mather. She was once a missing girl, now she lives in Topeka, Kansas. Kat is what West expected Sadie to be, restless, reckless, dramatic. 2 months ago, she was caught driving a stolen car. Now she lives with her aunt awaiting a court date. Reluctant at first, West persuades her to talk. In her interview, Kat admits that Sadie scared her a little. She explains she lost the credit card, Sadie didn't steal it, and that she met her hitchhiking out of Montgomery. Kat said Montgomery isn't this picture-perfect place. It's black underneath the surface. Both she and Sadie could tell. And the latest news confirms it. The episode cuts to a studio voice of West explaining that pillar of the community, Silas Baker, was arrested for sexually abusing young children he coached in T-ball over the last 7 years. The children aged from 5 to 8 years old. Back to Kat's interview, she explains how messed up Sadie has been from a fight. And it must have just happened. She didn't get bad vibes from Sadie, but she found a very bloody shirt and a switchblade on the back seat, which made her wary. West asks if Kat knew where Sadie was headed, and she says, yes, actually. The episode cuts to a conversation between West and Danny Gilchrist, but it's interrupted by a call from Mayor Beth. Claire is back.
Sadie. At 4 a.m., Sadie gets to Langford. She heads to the 24-hour laundromat, where the old clerk tells her that at 451 Twining Street is the Bluebird Motel. A short time later, Sadie is idling outside the motel in her car. She goes to rent a room, but the man behind the counter wants an ID. Damn it. Sadie tries her luck and mentions Darren Marshall, and the guy knows him and says he's a good pal. He forgets about the need for ID and gives her a 5% discount, saying, any friend of Darren's, and all that. He's also able to confirm Darren isn't around, but he should be soon. After a shower and in clean clothes, Sadie crawls into bed. Half asleep, she feels the dip of a mattress, a touch on her ankle, and a male voice asking if she has said her prayers. When he sees she's asleep, he tells her he'll go and make sure Maddie has said hers. Sadie's eyes snap open.
The Girls, Episode 5. West has gone back to Cold Creek. It's still dark, but Mia Beth insists he come over. Claire refuses to talk to him, and Mia Beth says she is being typically selfish. West can hear Mia Beth and Claire shouting at each other, and Claire had broken the locks to Sadie and Matty's trailer, and Mia Beth found her curled on Matty's bed. It takes 2 hours, but Claire finally comes to talk. West is surprised by Claire. She's put on weight, and though she is chain-smoking, she isn't using. Claire tells West she found out about Matty from the news and she tried to kill herself, but a friend helped her get clean instead. She only found out Sadie was missing that night. Claire said she got clean for Sadie. Mia Beth interrupts the interview and Claire breaks down again. West is able to get Mia Beth inside, but Claire is visibly agitated. She will only tell West that she too was a kid. She was a drug addict. She had Sadie as a child. She lost her own mother as a child. She ends the interview.
Sadie. Sadie heads back to the motel office, and someone different is at the desk this time. Sadie asks about Darren, and the attendant says that he has number 10 permanently rented out. He's been friends with Joe, the manager, for years. He saved Joe's life. Darren's a good guy. He offers to take a note, but no, he won't let Sadie into the room to leave a surprise. Surprise, motherfucker!
There's a knife for your throat.
Oh. Sadie pushes the attendant, Ellis, too much. So he stops answering her questions about Darren and starts asking about her and her beat-up face. Ellis tells her that he met Darren online and that they share a common interest. That Darren helped him out of a tough spot and got him this job. He's a great guy. Wait, they met online? He was in a tough spot? They have similar interests? This causes major warning bells to go off for Sadie, so she leaves. She tries the door at number 10, but it's locked, and she punches it in frustration. Heading around to the back of the building, she sees small windows into the rooms. She can get through one of those small windows. When it gets dark, Sadie punches through the glass to Keith's room. Huge mistake. Her arm is torn to shreds. It's a bloody, cut-up mess and hurts so bad. Fighting back screams, she crawls into Keith's room. She wraps her arm in towels and starts to search the room. Under his mattress, she finds an envelope filled with fake IDs. He has so many different names. Greg, Connor, Adam, Toby, Don, and Keith. Nearly all of them have an X scratched over the picture. Sadie searches more and finds parts of shirt collars with names written on them in black marker. Trophies. Mementos. She scrambles for the photo she's been carrying around and notices the shirt she was wearing in it. And finds a matching piece of collar with her name on it. Sadie grabs them. She can't leave them there. Suddenly, Alice is standing in the doorway. Sadie shoves him against the wall. She cries, "Are you like him?" Alice doesn't understand. Sadie screams, "Do you fuck little girls?" Alice denies it. Tells Sadie he met Darren in an online game. He isn't lying. He looks at her arm, her face. He wants to help her.
The Girls, Episode 5. West continues Episode 5 in Langford, heading to the address Cadmere they give. The Bluebird Motel that West describes generously as rustic. It's definitely not one of the motels you see in Supernatural.
Well, it probably does have like nice 70s interior.
I think it's 70s after it's had a very hard paper round and worked in the mines for 40 years. That's my impression.
Yeah. Or it's one of the motels that they stay in Supernatural, but after like a demon or somebody has come and they've just trashed the whole place.
Yeah, exactly that.
Yeah.
So the owner, Joe Perkins, has sold the property to Marcus Danford, who will demolish it for the best. West interviews Joe. Usually he can't remember guests, they're just a blur, but he remembers Sadie when West shows him her picture. She was looking for his friend, Darren. West asks about Darren. Joe tells him Darren saved his life. And he got hit by a drunk driver who never stopped. Darren was behind him and stopped him from bleeding out until the ambulance arrived. He doesn't know where he is now. He comes and goes. He's a great guy. But he never seems to have his shit together. Joe hands West Darren's phone number, but there is no answer. Joe also doesn't believe Darren would abandon a daughter. No, he wasn't that kind of guy. West asks to see Darren's room, but Joe is reluctant.
Sadie is in the office with Ellis, who uses a first aid kit to try to bandage her arm. Next to her are Keith's IDs and the trophies. Ellis tries to tend to her arm as best he can. He hasn't made a move to call the cops yet because he doesn't know what to do. Sadie explains what the tags are, and Ellis looks ill, but he doesn't know what to think. Ellis urges Sadie to call the police, but she won't. He can't imagine Darren as this person she describes, despite the evidence right in front of him. He got him this job. He saved Joe's life. He's a decent guy. Ellis seems to know where Keith/Darren is, so Sadie pleads with him.
The Girls, Episode 5. The recording continues in Darren Marshall's room, which is a mess. Furniture upended, clothes tossed about, bed sheets ripped off, all the doors and drawers open, food spoiled in the fridge. Joe Perkins steps into the bathroom, notices a smashed window and blood. West takes photos of the room with his phone. As West examines the room, he notices a matchbook from Cooper's bar on the bedside and a photograph on the floor of Claire, Matty, Sadie and Keith from a few years ago. West shows Joe the picture, who confirms that Keith is Darren, then asks what is going on. Stepping outside, West calls Mia Beth, who confirms that it's the missing photo from her album.
Sadie. Langford is miles behind Sadie. She's now heading to Fairfield, which was the last place Ellis said Darren was. She has to pull over to be sick. Sadie remembers the year Keith lived with them. She was 11 and Maddie was 5. She never slept. Claire would come home drunk and loud, but Keith would be sober. When her mother was done shuffling about and Keith was finished tidying in the kitchen, she knew what would happen next. Usually, Sadie would give herself up for Maddie, but one night she just couldn't do it, and the next morning, Keith was gone. Sadie carries that guilt with her. She was Maddie's first word. She held Maddie in her arms as a baby. Sadie remembers the day when she was 19 and Maddie was 13. Maddie came home and announced that she had seen Keith. Maddie told him Claire was in LA and Keith offered to take her there to find her. Maddie crept away during the night and got into his truck. These thoughts cement Sadie's resolve to kill him.
The Girls, Episode 6. Keith is Darren, West says. He shows the picture he found to Ruby Lockwood at Ray's Diner, who confirms that this is the one Sadie had. West also wants to make sure that Keith isn't Sadie's father. Mia Beth said she'll check with Claire, but she doubts it. In a recording of the phone call with Danny Kilcrest, West gives an update on his investigation. Sadie is looking for Keith who is also known as Darren. Sadie is saying he is her father, but that's highly unlikely. So who is Keith / Darren? West has got people looking into it. As West is talking to Danny, he realises that Cooper's Bar is the place in Montgomery owned by Silas Baker, who has been charged with sex crimes, and that Marley Singer, who refuses to talk to him, is his younger sister. There are too many coincidences. West has a bad feeling about this. In a voiceover, West describes the Silas Baker case. Local 18-year-old Javier Cruz. Is it Javier?
Javi.
Local 18-year-old Javi Cruz reported a dead body in an abandoned house. Police couldn't find the body, but they did find a collection of pornographic photographs of local children. West interviews Javi, who is having a hard time with the Baker loyalists. He recounts his time with Sadie. He was instantly aware of her and wanted to be in her orbit. He tells West about Lily's cafe, how he could tell something was wrong, so she showed him. She took him to the house where he saw the pictures. He left the house screaming. Sadie told him to report it and, if necessary, say there was a dead body. After 10 minutes of pacing in front of the payphone Sadie dropped him off at, he made the call. West tries Marley Singer again, but gets a voicemail. He contacts Mayor Beth and learns that Claire has disappeared again. He heads back to Cold Creek.
Sadie. At Fairfield, Colorado, Sadie parks outside a run-down two-story house. She's waiting for Keith. Sadie closes her eyes for a while, and when she opens them, there's a little girl, about 10, sitting on the stoop. Sadie gets out of her car and approaches the girl. She looks frail, surrounded by scribbles and a battered copy of The Babysitter's Club. Sadie makes small talk about the book. The little girl wants to buy the whole set secondhand in the bookstore, but doesn't have the money. Sadie finds out her name is Nell. She says she is a friend of her mom's boyfriend. You know Christopher? But she says this with fear. Sadie also finds out that he's inside, asleep, and her mom is at work. As Sadie tries to go inside, Nell starts to panic. Sadie urges Nell to come with her, to leave this place because it's not safe. As Nell starts to scream for her mom, Sadie digs into her pocket and pulls out a 20, tells her to go and get some of the Babysitter's Club books. Nell takes the money and runs off. Sadie faces the house and lets herself inside. As Sadie searches the house, she finds Nell's room and is transfixed. As she is looking at her neat room, her drawings, her tiny clothes, a voice behind her says, "Always wondered if you'd show up on my doorstep one day." Keith. As Sadie looks him over, she braces herself. When she blinks, however, he has disappeared. But the back door is open. As she steps outside, everything in her head explodes in stars and pain and blackness.
The Girls, Episode 6. Claire still hasn't returned to Coal Creek. Mayor Beth thinks she's in a bar somewhere, but West finds her in the orchard where Matty's body was found. They talk about Sadie, and that Claire actually does love her daughter, despite all the evidence to the contrary. Claire has spent the last 3 years in Harding's Grove, not far from Cold Creek. She never sent a postcard from LA. Sadie was a clever girl, and had been forging Claire's signature on permission slips since she was 7. She would sign Claire's name on Matty's birthday and Christmas gifts. It was Sadie who sent the postcard. In a voiceover, West explains that this piece of information reveals so much. Sadie unknowingly caused the crack in her relationship with Matty by throwing her a lifeline. And because of that postcard, Matty ran away and was murdered. Back in the recording in the orchard, West mentions that Sadie was looking for Keith, and the interview moves to Mayor Beth's trailer. Mayor Beth defends Keith before Claire can say anything other than he was a mistake. Mayor Beth is asked to leave. Claire tells of how Keith helped keep her sick. He never drank himself, but kept giving her money to do so. Claire kicked him out because he always seemed to be too interested in the girls, and she didn't like the way he was looking at Matty. Claire found him in Matty's room. She was wasted. Can't be sure if her memory was right. The next day, every time his name was mentioned, Matty seemed fine, So she thinks she got there in time. Claire breaks down when West asks if Keith ever abused Sadie because she doesn't know. In a recording of Mia Beth, she struggles with this information. As West is talking to Claire and Mia Beth, Joe Perkins calls. He needs West to come talk to a kid who used to work for him, Ellis Jacobs.
The Girls, Episode 7. Ellis was kicked out of his home when he was 17 and was effectively homeless until, at 24, he met Darren. They met in an online game and struck up a friendship. Darren got Ellis the job at the Bluebird. He tells West about Sadie asking about Darren and how her insistence about getting into Darren's room made him check on it. He found her inside. Sadie asked if he was like Darren. Ellis tells West her exact words. He recounts their time in the office, him fixing her arm up and her talking about Darren's time as Keith, how he hurt her little sister. Ellis also tells West about the fake IDs and the trophies and how one of the names was Sadie. When she told him Keith did something to her little sister, he told her where to go next, though he urged her to call the police. He didn't call the police either. West heads to Fairfield, Colorado, but he is struggling. In a recorded call with Danny Gilchrist, he admits this, but Danny tells him he can do it. West approaches the rundown two-story in Fairfield. A woman opens the door. When he shows her a picture of Keith/Darren, the recording picks up her gasp. Then, she tells West the man in the picture is dead.
The Girls, Episode 8. The episode begins with a voiceover. It's a year after West was told Keith is dead. The lady who Keith was living with is Amanda. Her surname is withheld. She no longer lives in Fairfield. In her interview, Amanda says she met the man she knew as Christopher in the bar she was working at. He was nice and attentive. Her daughter never told her anything was wrong. But as a mother, she should have known. Her daughter is in therapy twice a week now. The usual red flags, like his unemployment, seemed overridden by him being just so nice. West asks how he died. Amanda got home a little early that night after a shift swap. She found her daughter home alone with an armful of new Babysitter Club books. Christopher came back around 9 p.m, looking awful and dirty. He told her he got mugged and beaten up, but the police were not called. She told him they should at least go to the hospital, but he refused. They had dinner, he had a shower and went to bed. At about midnight, she called 911 because he was unresponsive. Off interview, West fills in some of the gaps. Christopher had a stab wound that had become infected and he died of sepsis a few days later. When Amanda went through his belongings, his money was in his wallet, so the mugging story didn't add up. In his truck was an ID with his picture, but not his name. This ID belonged to Jack Hirsch. Amanda managed to get in touch with his estranged parents about the funeral. Thankfully, she didn't have to pay for that one. Jack had a difficult childhood with devout parents and a drunk father. Jack was also known as a creep. He publicly exposed himself at age 12 and at 17, out of the blue, became friends with Silas Baker. Marley Singer has finally agreed an interview, and she says they probably recognised it in each other. She sent Sadie to her brother because she always felt powerless against Silas. Returning to Amanda's interview, she said her daughter was relieved when Christopher died. When West turned up on the door with the photo, they called the police. Amanda's daughter remembers Sadie. She thought she was trying to take her, but really, it seemed she was trying to save her. In a phone recording with Danny Gilchrist, West asks, where is Sadie?
It seems there was an altercation between Sadie and Jack. West wants to believe Sadie survived it. In a voiceover, West says, if I've learned anything about Sadie Hunter, it was that she was almost a secondary player in her own life. Maybeth calls to let West know that DNA found at Maddie's crime scene matches Jack. The investigation to find Sadie is ongoing. It's Claire's idea to call the show The Girls for all the girls that Sadie must have saved. In his sign-off, West pleads to Sadie that if she's out there, let him know because he can't take another dead girl. Oof, everyone go take a break. Everyone go take a break right
break
now.
Time.
We need a break. Everyone go. Please remember that Fictional Hangover is a free podcast and always will be. If you'd like to support the show, stop listening to us for just a few minutes, become a patron of ours on Patreon at patreon.com/fictionalhangover, then come back. If you can't do this monthly but still want to support us because you just like the show so much, head over to Ko-fi at ko-fi.com/fictionalhangover to drop us a one-time tip. Your support on Patreon and Ko-fi will help us bring you more spoiler-filled discussions, book character cosplays, and ridiculous content you know and love. Now, back to the episode.
Oh my goodness. Can you see why I've not described it as a book that I have enjoyed and more as a book that I have experienced? It's so heavy.
It's a good book.
Yes.
But it's not a good story.
It's a horrible, terrible story. Yeah. It's like reading... You can't... I don't like non-fiction a lot.
No, I don't either.
Like stories of people's lives, tragic stories of people's lives. Because I read to escape.
Yeah, and you don't want to make this escape.
No, I read for thrill and fun and tea and crumpets on a steampunk airship.
Yeah, this is not a jolly book.
Not a vampire in sight.
No. No, I would like it better if Keith Darren was a vampire.
I think, no, I love vampires. Don't make the bad guy the vampire. Make Sadie the vampire and she goes in rip-roaring adventure of...
Okay, now look, Keith Darren is a vampire. And the unmentionable acts that happen was Keith Darren turning Sadie into a vampire.
And then, she's a vampire hunter.
She is. She's Blade.
This is the fanfic I need.
Done.
We have it. We've struck gold. That's it for this week's fictional hangover. We can talk about nothing else.
Just imagine the rest of the conversation as if she is a vampire hunter. A vampire hunter.
Yes.
It's important to say vampire twice.
Yeah, she's freshly turned vampire hunter as well. She hasn't taken a life, but she has mildly fed. Which does explain the scene when she's in Lily's cafe and she's eating the breakfast.
Yeah, and she's really struggling to eat breakfast and she's like, I can't eat this. I can't eat this because it's not blood. That's why she's sick. Mm-hmm. Exactly. We figured it out. We've made it better.
Wow.
Is it, how, like, sad is it that this is what we have to insert in this story?
Yeah, I mean...
Because, yikes.
Do you know, as I was reading the book, I was trying to look... I'm going to jump slightly ahead a little bit. I'm not going to give it, but I'm going to jump slightly ahead a little bit. And usually when I'm reading a book, when we come to good quotes, things that make me laugh or, you know, something that's quite meaningful, I'll... copy it out, put it into our show notes, so I know it's there, and I don't forget about them as I typically do. And I struggled, because there was nothing that stood out. There was no joy.
Yeah, there's no one for fun in this one, guys.
Spoilers, no one for fun, because it just doesn't exist. But even just the general life lessons, there were so many horrible moments and terrible people.
Yeah.
In this book.
Yeah. Yeah, so let's just imagine them all as vampires and that will make our lives easier.
What stood out for you then?
Really just that Sadie never gives up. I mean, all of the shit that she's gone through in her life and even the trials that she went through on her journey that we get to be a part of.
Mm-hmm.
It's still awful, but she never gave up.
No.
And, you know, kind of like when we were talking about The Dead House with Dawn Kurtigich and you had your fan fiction of what happens at the end, where we just imagine Caitlin going to the movies, sitting.
She's in her London flat. Her she has cat. A cat. She has her books. Yeah, yeah, yeah. She has the happy ending.
Yeah, and also at the end of Harrow Lake, when we just imagine what happens at the end, where Lola has struggled so much throughout the entire book, just gets to go on and do something better. I'm going to keep that hope alive.
So and you have a post-credit scene for Sadie, effectively.
Yeah. When in, I was... in which she is a vampire hunter. And then she enrolls herself at the Vampire Academy.
Oh, God, it just gets better.
I know. It just keeps getting better. And then she pokes Stewie Dimitri in the face. Because he's still there.
Yeah. Of course, he's still training guardians. I'm going to also insert a character called Van Helsing, but it's going to be a girl.
Okay.
And she's going to be a slight like peer slash mentor for Sadie. Best friends, but a little bit frenemy at the same time. Yeah. And Van Helsing is obviously not her real name, but she likes the whole, you know, irony factor.
Yeah. So she's one of the Instagram influencer friends who was supposed to be at the bar, but she was away on an important assignment at that time.
Yeah. Exactly, exactly.
Do you know,
getting back to the real story of Sadie, what I did notice, like, this book is used a lot in book discussion groups, and there's the, in the back of the, I don't know if it's in the back of the copy that you have, but in the ebook copy, there were discussion questions,
right?
Yeah, and one of the questions that is asked is, well, what happens to Sadie? What do you think happens to Sadie? And I don't mind an open-ended ending. Like, the Dead House. You know, we came up with our own ending for that. Because it did end, but didn't end.
Yeah, but it definitely ended because she was definitely engulfed in flames.
Yeah, but...
But we can dream.
We can dream. But this doesn't end with any kind of narrative from Sadie. We don't know what happened between her and Jack Hirsch properly, other than she's certainly got a few good licks in.
One very good lick. At least
he was dirty and looking awful, so I think she'll at least get some, you know, punches and kicks and stuff in there as well. But the big question is, well, what does happen to Sadie? And there's part of it that thinks it's so open-ended because they're leaving a season two for the podcast.
Could be.
Which is potentially Sadie's narrative. It's not West, it's Sadie. Like, almost like a response. But I don't
Could
know.
Could be.
My problem with that, though, is Jack walked away. Yes, he walked away with an infected wound to the belly. Ha, good.
Yeah.
But he still walked away. He came home. He had dinner. He had a shower and he went to bed. If there was any chance of Sadie still being alive, his Christopher ID is burned.
Yeah.
So, I want a happy ending for Sadie because, you know, it's a direct quote from the story that West thinks she's a secondary player in her own life, and that is devastating to me. And I want her to be the star of her life. I want her to have all the good things. But I can't imagine that she got out there. And it makes me want to cry.
It could be that she was left for dead. And Jack Hirsch shuffles away from wherever they went.
Gets rid of her car.
Yeah, because surely she's, you know, not just in the backyard. So...
That's an interesting point. Did he get rid of her car? Or did she dump the car?
It could be that somehow she got away. She stabbed him, gets in her car, runs. And since he was stabbed, he decides, I'm going to go and I'm going to take a shower and I'm going to eat a nice meal and I'm going to go to sleep and I'm going to wake up and the next day I'm going to leave.
Yeah.
Let's think about it that way.
Yeah, I like that way better. It's less destructive for my mental health.
Yeah.
After reading that book.
Yeah. So we're gonna make her Lola.
Okay. can live with that. I imagine Sadie throughout the entire thing a little bit like the bride out of Kill Bill. She was on a roaring rampage of revenge and nothing was going to stop her. Yeah. Everything upon the way is just going to empower her more.
Yeah.
I wish she'd gotten a few good licks in with Silas' mind.
I thought she stabbed him. Or she just get the knife out? I can't quite remember. And
she got the knife out, but I think he hit her in the face first.
Yeah. I honestly, like, I had that thought, and then I thought, I don't want to go back and check. I don't want to go back and, like, fact check my thoughts, so I'm just going to not worry about it.
No, Silas is not harmed physically.
Can we make her have stabbed him? Ooh. We're changing the story here, Claire. She stabbed him, okay?
She stabbed him up so much. It's one of these where he stabbed so much you don't know which one was the killing wound.
Okay.
Or we can go down the route of Oriental Express, where everybody just has a go. All the victims just line up and have a go. And you can't tell which one was the killing wound.
Yeah, it's everybody's fault.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So now, in our narrative that we're creating, not only is Sadie a vampire hunter, but I would like to add in, she has a slew of, I don't want to say tiny, like, children ghosts, because let's hope that all the children are
vengeful
still living.
Vengeful spirits.
Who
need to enact their last task.
But they're not dead because they all are living happy, peaceful lives and everything is okay.
It's one of these supernatural phenomenons where when a bad act has occurred, there's a separation between self and the act, and it's the act, that vengefulness, that is separated. So the child can now go and live a happy and healthy, fulfilled life, and the other part is separated and will go and enact this.
Yes, they're on the astral plane.
On the astral plane and then disappear.
Okay, good.
Because
it's good.
The victims need avenging.
Yeah. Okay, so do you know there is one standout moment that...
Actually, in the book.
In the book, that actually happens in the actual book.
Okay.
Except for it doesn't, because it was me texting you about it, but... The fact that there are characters named Claire and Amanda, I was like, what the hell is this?
What is this?
Why? Like, we have a whole month in our year of challenges based on this thing right here, right now, that's happening. And we didn't know.
No.
We didn't know before picking this book up that there was a Claire and an Amanda.
When I started reading it, I listened to it first. When I started listening to it, I heard that the mum was called Claire. I was like, oh, no. Why does Claire have to be quite a negative character? And then when Amanda came and I was like, oh, my God. I couldn't say anything because I'd listened to it before you. And I was like, just keep quiet. She'll find out on her own and then you shall chuckle.
I think that was the only thing that I actually enjoyed about the book.
So yeah,
there's Claire and Amanda. Even though Claire's pretty shitty, and Amanda was late to the party.
Yeah, she was a minor character at the end, unfortunately.
Yeah, and she was not helpful in her own daughter's life because she didn't know things were bad.
No, I hated the way, but I know it's probably unfortunately based on real life events, the way that he's such a nice guy, he's a good guy, he would never do that, he's lovely, yeah, blah blah blah, and you're just screaming no.
Yeah,
I assume it's an accurate representation, and I'm not going to look into that because I don't want to.
But I'm positive that is correct.
Courtney Summers certainly will have done her homework over this.
I did read that this is not based on anything. It was in her head and came out. So at least there's that.
That's fine. Unfortunately, there is enough material out there for her to...
Right? How terrible is that? That this exactly. story is in her head. It's...
And I don't want to... I don't know. I find it really difficult. Like,
let's move on then. Let's stop talking about this. Who's your favorite character?
Danny Gilchrist. Because he is very... Not really in the book. But he's the one who tells Wes that you need to keep going. Like, Danny knows there's something there. He knows there's more to it. He's obviously got an eye for a story. And he kind of makes West keep going and keep digging. And if it wasn't for Danny, the full story wouldn't come out.
Yeah.
And Amanda's child in the book would never have got the help that she probably wasn't receiving. Until the knock on the door. What about you?
Javi.
Yeah.
I hated the Silas's kids. Their stupid, like, Instagram influencer lifestyle. They were garbage. But Javi immediately took a liking to Sadie in a non-terrible way. And... He saw her, and granted, she was trying to get the attention of these teenagers, but he was kind to her and tried to take care of her a little bit. And then when she took him to the abandoned house and showed him what she learned, and he took it from there, called the police, got Silas Baker out of the picture, because he's not as much of a victim as the other children involved in the story, but those were his friends.
Yeah.
That Silas had abused. So it was, I felt like it was a nice bit of, like, retribution. He was able to not save any of his friends, but save future kids from being hurt by Silas.
Mm-hmm. He was a protector. He wanted to protect Sadie. Yeah. And he didn't know he needed to protect the people on the kids on the T-ball team.
Right. Because again, just like with Keith Darren, he's a good guy. He's a pillar of the community.
Ellis could have, just side note, really been a little clearer about his initial relationship with Darren. Yeah, ooh. We met online and we have mutual
similar interests. Oh yeah, that made me want to throw up in my mouth.
Slimy look.
But you know, for Ellis, it's embarrassing to be it's not at all embarrassing to play MMORPGs online. Like, that's not embarrassing at all. But to him, he felt embarrassed by it. He doesn't want to tell Sadie, oh yeah, I met him. You know, fighting dwarves.
I was playing World of Warcraft.
Yeah. Yeah, oh. So we had a common interest. We met online, but she's automatically like, oh, well, you're terrible. I want to stab you, too.
Yeah. You were in trouble, were you? You were in a terrible situation, were you? Right. Well.
But you know, you know that Keith Darren was playing that game for a different reason.
Oh, completely. Exactly. Completely.
I wonder if Keith Darren was trying to find someone to take under his wing, like Silas took him under his wing.
Potentially.
But again, I don't want to talk about that. So, were you surprised by anything?
It took West so frickin' long to connect the dots. Like, at one point he says, it's been difficult to find a girl who's not trying to cover her tracks.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering, actually, did you try that hard? Did you really try hard to find her? And it kind of makes us think, no, you didn't actually. You really...
I felt like he wasn't fully invested in it at the beginning, so maybe
not for a long time.
Yeah, he didn't quite care as much as he should have.
It wasn't for me until probably episode 7 he started really giving a damn.
Yeah.
And again, it was because of Danny. He kept saying, you need to keep doing this, I know you can find something.
Yeah.
But the signs were there, you know? I think he just did he consciously or unconsciously choose to ignore them or not contemplate? Because again, it took a long time for him to start connecting those dots.
Yeah.
What about you?
I was really surprised to find out that Sadie sent the postcard and that, yeah, that's terrible that she signed the postcard that split the two girls up, that sent Maddie on her path, which led to her with Keith again. But what bothers me about it is, did the postcard actually go through the mail? Because there are stamps saying where mail was sent from.
Yeah.
And nobody looked at that.
Yeah. I mean, if the even if it's a generic franking on the postcard, because, you know, it happens. But stamps, especially I've noticed in the United States, are very state, unique to each state.
Not that. I'm talking about a stamp, like, from the postcard where it... I mean, from the post office where it's sent.
The franking. Yeah. I don't know what you guys call it, but we call it franking.
Yes, there's typically a location marked on it from the post office where it was sent from.
Yeah.
So that should be something, unless it wasn't mailed at all, which is even worse if it wasn't mailed at all.
It's huge signs like, hello, this has not gone through the postal system. It's not very... I've had post come through that hasn't had the franking marks on, that has quite clearly not gone through, like, it looks like it hasn't gone through the postal system. It has, it's missed in the machinery, which is called an imp in this country. I can't remember what imp stands for, but the sorting machines are called imps in this country.
I think that there was an issue there.
Yeah.
That was a missed bit of something that...
The only thing I can think of, tenuous, is that Sadie has found the postcard somewhere and it's just been a blank postcard somebody sent, saying greetings from LA sent. But even then it would have had somebody's address on.
Yeah, the postcard really bothers me. Even if it was just a postcard that she wrote on herself, a postcard from anywhere... The postcard that you pick up at the grocery store, or the pharmacy, whatever, you pick up a postcard in a store and write a message on it. But where did she get greetings from LA?
Yeah, that was my next question.
The whole postcard bothers me. There's too many details, like specific details about the postcard that just really feel incorrect.
I mean, I understand that she forged the postcard to make Maddie feel better about the mum running off. I get
that. Sure, yeah, that's fine.
But where did she get an LA postcard? Was the postcard stamped? Did it go through the machines to get all of the bits and pieces on that you can tell it's being through the mail?
There's too much about the postcard that doesn't add up correctly. So I would say that's the one thing about the book that... I mean, shit, there's a lot about the book that I don't like, but stepping away from everything terrible that happens in the story, that is something about the story that I did not like at all because it didn't add up. It felt incorrect. It felt wrong.
Yeah. No, the more I'm thinking about it, the more I dislike that bit.
Yeah.
My biggest issue, sorry to jump back, was that West didn't seem to follow like a timeline. Or he seemed to be very jumping back and forth and in and out. I don't know, he wasn't very concise in his investigation.
Yeah.
And that bothered me.
Yeah.
Hmm. Okay.
Anyway.
Shall we talk about the audiobook, seeing as it is a multi-award-winning audiobook?
Sure.
Okay.
Rebecca Solaire, great.
Brilliant.
Minus the one thing that I don't even think I've actually said out loud in the episode, but she did a great job.
Yeah. Dan Bittner, brilliant.
The extra people that I'm sorry I don't know their names, great.
But
the audio was good.
The audio was good. I preferred the book. Oh, is that a controversial thought?
It could be. There were some things about the audio that I didn't like as an editor, as someone who listens carefully for weird things that happen. There were some things that I didn't like. But yeah, the narrators, great. But there were some times where, you know, you're West and you're interviewing someone for the podcast. And so then you play a bit of the podcast and the audio was like way different. It was so much louder and there were sounds in the background, which is fine. It adds to the story, but it was too loud. It was too jarring, the differences. And I don't like that.
Yeah. I phased out of the audiobook a little bit. Like, it didn't grab me. I wasn't 100% into it. Which makes me feel really rubbish.
Because I don't think it should. I don't think it should make you feel bad. It's not a fun book to listen to. And it was jarring for reasons.
Yeah. It wasn't my favourite. And with it now, with knowing as well that it is such a big award winner, I think I'm a bit surprised by that. I wouldn't have pegged it as the winner.
I have heard better audiobooks with full casts.
Yes.
Sometimes I don't quite understand how the books are selected to be judged.
Yeah.
I'm sure I listen to audiobooks from 2018, 2019 that I liked better than this one.
I agree.
But it is tough because it's always like the heart-wrenching things that win awards, right? It has to like have substance. It has to be meaningful. It can't just be something that you enjoy.
This is what happened with, like, you know, Lord of the Rings at the Oscars, or, you know, Marvel movies, you know, basically comic book movies at award ceremonies. Critically, they can get panned, but they make a shit ton of money and produce huge fan bases. But because it's sci-fi, or it's comics, or it's fantasy, you know, I remember when Lord of the Rings was getting the Oscars way back when, and everybody's like, it's not going to win an Oscar for best movie because it's got, you know, dwarves and elves in. It's a fantasy movie. It's got to go for something where there's an emotional punch. You know, usually there's a crime or an illness or some kind of historical travesty. Something huge.
Yeah.
And then Return of the King won best film. And it was like, oh my God, it actually did win. Yet you're never going to find a comic book movie per se winning the Oscars because it's a comic book movie. It doesn't happen. It makes money, but it doesn't make awards. It'll get the MTV Movie Award or, you know, Best Kiss or whatever, but it's not going to win a Golden Globe or...
And then, that's a shame. There are very good things out there that aren't heart-wrenching and painful to watch or listen to or read.
Yeah. Like, it's like we said, top of the shop. We read for escapism and we read for pleasure, and I have no interest in heart-wrenching stories like this in real life, and I struggle with it in fiction. It's not fun for me. It is an experience, so I am glad that I read Sadie, but I never need to read it again.
Yeah. So let's play Would You Rather.
Yeah!
Yeah, let's do that.
Would you rather?
Pew, pew, pew.
We asked you lovely people on social media, would you rather host a podcast or be the subject of a podcast? On Facebook, 89% of you said host and 11% said subject. On Instagram, 68% host and 32% said subject. And Twitter was 50-50.
I am so shocked about Twitter being 50-50.
Yes.
I'm not shocked at all about that.
No, Twitter very rarely shocks us, really.
I know.
So we pulled some comments. Nancy Theatre on Instagram said, subject of a podcast, I would have made my mark somewhere in the world.
Danae Tesh on Instagram said, host the podcast because that way you have more control on the narrative, whereas being the subject, well, it'll be fair game, and I can't promise it'll make you look good. Ooh. Shrug!
At Lord Sock on Twitter, host because I already want to make my own podcast. To which he has promised it will not be a spoiler-filled YA book discussion.
Good. We've got that under control, I think.
Yeah, we're sorted for that one. But we may be guests, just so you know.
Yes.
We may be booked.
Finally, Annie on Facebook said, my podcast will be about gardens in books. There will be much Jane Austen.
I am subscribing, Annie. Just let me know when you're starting that one up.
Yep. We'll be there. I will not be a guest because I don't care anything about Jane Austen, but if we talk about, like, vegetable gardens, I'll join you for that.
Well, I'll do the Jane Austen speech bit, like, that area, and you can do the gardening bit because I kill plants. So then we'll do a nice 50-50.
Yeah, I'll be there for gardens, but not
You be there. Gardens Austen. Sorted. Okay,
good.
Cool.
Deal.
Cool.
So what's your response?
I really struggle with this one.
Because you already host a podcast and it's kind of tough.
Yeah. But I am a majorly boring person. So what the hell would anybody want to talk about me for on the subject of a podcast? If you want to talk about me, I'm sorry. It's a short podcast. I can actually do it for you right now. What the fuck? There you go. That's the podcast.
That's it.
That's it. That's the end of the podcast for Claire. So, see, Danae is correct that if you are the subject, it's fair game and you have no control over how you're portrayed.
Yeah.
But Nancy makes a good point that at least if you're the subject, you've made your mark somewhere in the world.
Yeah. Are you famous or are you infamous? Does it matter as long as people are talking about you and you remain relevant? Yes.
Like an artist, I am not appreciated in my own time.
Right, right. You are an unsuccessful artist. And I am in an unsuccessful boy band.
Artist formerly known as whatever.
Yes.
Okay, I think I'm probably going to have to go subject just because, you know, I host a podcast already. Yeah,
then they're done that. Constantly doing it all the time.
It's a weekly engagement.
Do it weekly. Yeah.
We do it weekly. Every week we're here. But I'm really sorry to whoever hosts that podcast because, well, at least the research will be short.
Yeah.
What about you?
I would also like to be the subject of a podcast, but much in the way that we find the people that we talk to on our podcast. You know, everyone knows it's my dream to narrate audiobooks. So if I get invited on Fictional Hangover Podcast, wherein I will interview myself and you will also interview me about narrating audiobooks, then I will be the subject of it.
That'll be completely meta and I'm there for it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that'll be weird. Yeah. But I'll, like, take on a different voice or something.
General American!
No, I'm not General American, because General American does not smell good. Anyway. All that weird, like, brain-twisting confusion aside, let's go on to our next question. Would you rather...
I'm just imagining doing it as like a phone call interview as well, and then your reception's not the best. And you're like, sorry, there's a car passing by. Really, let's just go and lean into it all.
If we do enter in some future realm, interview me. I'm gonna have us up. I'm gonna have myself up on two different Zooms.
You will get feedback.
Well, I mean, I'll turn off a microphone.
Will you put a hat on one of them as you're responding, though?
Yes, I will lean over and, like, hold up a mustache.
I'm excited by the fact that, you know, Amanda, the guest audiobook narrator, will have glittery eyebrows, whereas Amanda, podcast host, will not.
I think you might have gotten that backwards. I feel like podcast host Amanda would be more likely to have glittery eyebrows. than podcast guest Amanda.
Can podcast guest Amanda be like, you know, black turtleneck, black beret at a jaunty angle?
Sunglasses?
Pale. Sunglasses, yes.
I am very pale.
Some nice Jackie Ores, you know, some big ones.
I've got some of those. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You've got to go for a big red lip or something like that.
Sure.
Or just complete pale. And be like, you know, very hip.
Sure.
Kind of.
Yeah, I can. I will adopt that persona whenever this fictitious future inside-outside interview happens.
Mint. I have a feeling that my podcast subject will just be tips of me in a therapy session or something. Like, Claire, do you understand what reality is?
No.
Yes! Vampire hunters abound!
Good. Yes, okay.
Next question.
Next question, please. Would you rather get your nose broken or your arm cut up?
Man.
Let's get progressively worse.
Yeah, why not? Okay, right. It's both going to suck.
Yep.
Feel like I'm going to go with the nose being broken. Because yes, it's going to suck. It is going to be unsightly. Your nose will maybe knocked out. However, plastic surgery can fix that. And if your arm's cut up, there may be nerve or muscle damage, which would lead to a lot more problems later on.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go with nose broken. Please don't break my nose.
I have broken my nose once.
Ooh. How? Was it in dancing?
No, it was not in dancing.
Did you just cosplay?
No. I don't remember how old I was. I was young.
Did your
elementary
sister
school,
do it?
Middle school, I think, and I was playing outside, and it was icy out, and I was walking up a ramp, and it was icy, and I slipped, and I landed right on my nose.
Ugh.
Yeah.
I've never broken a bone, touch wood.
I've also broken, like, toes, but yeah, there's not much you can do about that.
No, I'm convinced I broke my toe the other week, because, like, 5 days later, it was still agony.
Yeah. I haven't broken, like, a major bone, though.
No. Ugh.
But I think, plastic surgery aside, whatever, I think I'm still going to go with broken nose because of the same issues that you said. There could be potential nerve damage or something, and probably if I were breaking through a window with my hand, I mean, I probably would have wrapped my hand up in something first. Like, even
yes.
if it meant me taking my shirt off outside, I would have wrapped my hand up with something before I shattered
go
the glass.
Go into your own room and get one of the bathroom towels. Yeah,
something. I would have wrapped my hand up first. I probably would have had to use my dominant hand because it is stronger and I can do things better.
Yeah.
So that would be bad because then it could possibly be damaged for the rest of my life. And also I feel like you move your hand and fingers and arm around a lot more than you move your nose and face region. So you could potentially rip wounds back open. It could be worse for a longer amount of time. So I'm gonna go with breaking the nose.
Yeah.
But let's not do either, okay?
Yeah, I'm fine with that. Next question. Would you rather stab Silas or stab Jack, Darren, Keith, Christopher person?
Both?
Well, yes.
I mean, probably just for the whole vengeance thing, Jack, Darren, Keith, Christopher.
Roaring revenge. Love it.
Yeah. Yeah. Because you know what? I didn't play table. But who has hurt more people? Because that person gets stabbed. That's tough because
this is
know.
Our game. Remember, we are the lords and masters of our podcast world. This is ours.
Yeah. Well, then I'm stabbing both of them. Deal with it.
I'm stabbing Jack Darren Keith Christopher with his own switchblade because that motherfucker deserves it.
Yeah. Oh, and it's dirty too.
And it's dirty. It's probably been in a basement.
Yeah.
Do you know what Silas is going to get? A bat.
Baseball bat. That'd be good.
Uh-huh. And I'm going to beat the ever-loving shit out of him until he is a bloody mess on the ground.
And then you're going to run him over with your car.
And the birds can eat it.
Okay.
Because good. This is our podcast and we're allowed to do that.
Yes. We write our own fan fiction.
Yes.
of our own lives.
Next question. God, these are awful.
Would you rather find the fake IDs or the trophies?
If I want to find the fake IDs, I feel like I am neglecting the victims. But I don't know how much my brain can handle that. Finding the trophies.
Yeah.
It's evidence of a foul creature and would hopefully help justice be served as evidence. But I'm going to go with the fake IDs for the sake of sanity.
I'm also going to go with the fake IDs because that's more helpful than finding the trophies. The trophies are awful, but they're not going to help anyone.
No, there's more questions about why somebody has a dozen fake IDs with scratches through them to show that they've been burned than pieces of cloth.
Yeah. It would suck to find those, but really, it's not going to help anyone.
No. Okay.
Jeez!
Last question. Would you rather sleep in the Bluebird Motel or sleep in your car?
Which room of the Bluebird Motel? Like my own room? That's been cleaned?
Cleaned! You're the Lord and Master of your own destiny.
Even though it's probably a scuzzy, terrifying roadside motel that you probably don't want to sleep in, I think I would probably go for the motel than my car. Because I drive a mini, and my car is small. It would not be comfortable to sleep in.
You get the honeymoon suite, where if you put 50 cents into the machine, it starts, the bed vibrates.
Okay.
But it's really peculiar because it's also a water bed, and it's circular in the middle of the room.
Do you know what? Yes, all of that is great, but I'm going to go back to what we talked about earlier in the episode, and that the Bluebird Motel is a motel from Supernatural.
With no birds anywhere.
With no birds anywhere. But perhaps Sam or Dean or Castiel makes an appearance?
Oh no, we're double booked. Darn. You have to share a room with Winchester brothers and
you
Castiel.
Have to sleep on my waterbed? Oh, it's terrible.
Yeah.
Do you like jacuzzis? Yeah. That's it.
I say I'm with you, but more in your reasoning and what's going to happen, not actually physically there, because, you know.
That's probably for the best.
Yeah, you have your own, and I.
We have adjoining rooms with, like, the door in between. And then the Winchester brothers can just go back and forth and visit us and we can have a party.
Yeah, I'm down with that.
Okay, cool. Good.
Mint.
Good ending. Good ending to a terrible would you rather.
To be fair, the source material does not...
It does not lend itself to would you rathers.
No.
It also does not lend itself to very good favorite final thought quotes.
No, it
They're
doesn't.
Meaningful this time. No one for funs, because there's nothing fun about it.
No. My one and only, which makes me sad because I usually like to pull a few, my one and only favorite final thought quote is, Sadie turned out good in spite of them, not because of them. And you can change the name to somebody else. Because there is always that person who is a good person because that's what's inside them, not what circumstances have dictated. What about you?
We have more story than time to tell it, but I suppose that's true for all of us. I'm going the safe route. I'm going the podcast route. I'm not going the Sadie route.
Still good, though.
Yeah. Hopefully our stories that we need more time to tell our good stories, and they're not bad. Yikes!
Yeah.
If you liked this, try this.
Okay, so I'm going to go with We Were Liars by E. Lockhart, which is
episode
35 of this fair podcast.
Indeed, that is a BC time. That is a before Claire time.
It is, however, I have read it. I read it whilst it went, when you said it was going to be on the podcast, I read it. So I read it for the podcast, just not for the podcast.
Right.
And there's a couple of reasons why I've selected this one. It's got that whole teenage twist of trying to work out what's gone on.
Okay.
But also, it is an award winner. It won the Goodreads Choice Awards for Best Young Adult Fiction in 2014.
Nice.
The blurb is from booktrust.org.uk, and it is, 17-year-old Katie is one of the privileged, carefree, beautiful Sinclairs. She spends her summers on the luxurious private island on the coast of Massachusetts, where her family gather every year. Here, she spent many charmed summer vacations, long, idyllic days by the ocean with her cousins Mirren and Johnny and their friend Gat. But this summer, something is different. This captivating young adult novel grabs a reader's attention from the very first sentences and holds it right up until its unexpected and shocking ending. E. Lockhart paints a vivid portrait of the Sinclair family, spinning a dreamy, addictive tale of first love, friendship and family that teens will find impossible to put down. It was good. Quick read. Very quick read.
Very quick read.
Yeah. Or you can cheat and just listen to the podcast.
You can. That was right after your first appearance.
And I knew it was going to be on, even though it wasn't advertised it was going to be on, because she sent me a list and said, this is what we're going to cover. Which one do you want?
And now we tell everyone what we're going to cover. Which makes a little bit more sense. Mm. So people can read along with us.
It's good for the book club.
It is good for the book club. But you know what? The book club didn't exist then.
It didn't. Makes it easier for the book club when they know what we're going to cover.
Especially... it easier for the book club when there is a book club that exists.
Exactly. Two things which are very important. Existent knowledge.
Yes.
Anywho, what have you got?
I picked Vanishing Girls by Lauren Oliver, and my summary is from Epic Reads. Dara and Nick used to be inseparable, but that was before the accident that left Dara's beautiful face scarred and the two sisters totally estranged. When Dara vanishes on her birthday, Nick thinks Dara's just playing around. But another girl, 9-year-old Madeline Snow, has vanished too, and Nick becomes increasingly convinced that the two disappearances are linked. Now, Nick has to find her sister before it's too late. In this edgy and compelling novel, Lauren Oliver creates a world of intrigue, loss, and suspicion as two sisters search to find themselves and each other.
Ooh.
Yeah, so I picked that one for the sisters. The sisters element.
Sounds good.
Tenuous.
Well, let's face it, I wasn't going to find it for the same kind of content.
No.
No.
Mm-mm. No. Yikes.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's it for this episode of Fictional Hangover. Thanks for listening. Sorry? Shrug?
It's not a bad book, honest. It's just not light and fluffy. And I've had to go and listen to some really, really light and fluffy stuff afterwards just to try and bring me back up.
Right. Well, I'm Amanda.
And I'm Claire.
Join us next time. Oh, the joy is back. Join us next time as we discuss book 2 in the Vampire Academy series, Frostbite by Rochelle Mead. Look out for our Would You Rather polls on social media. Don't forget about our book club and monthly challenges on Facebook. Be sure to visit our shop on Redbubble at fictionalhangover.redbubble.com for all your favorite Fictional Hangover-themed merchandise, and become a patron of ours on Patreon at patreon.com/fictionalhangover or support us on Ko-fi at ko-fi.com/fictionalhangover. Until next time, remember, the only cure for a fictional hangover is another book.
You can find us at fictionalhangover.com, follow us on Instagram at fictionalhangover, find us on Facebook at facebook.com/fictionalhangover, and on Twitter at fictionalhangover, no ER. If you'd like this episode, check out our others and rate, review and subscribe so you don't miss out. And finally, special thanks to Liz Emerson for our music. You can find her on Facebook and Patreon. Thanks for listening.